2012. This is the Committee of the Whole of Savannah City Council. In attendance are all council members. And from the administration, we have the mayor, Chief Rodas, Jim Moan, George Eichenhauer, Scott Smith. Oh, pardon me, Scott is left, and George is left, I'm sorry. We have Bill Rodas and Bill Sanford. The purpose of this meeting, by the way, the time is 6:03 p.m. The purpose of this meeting is a review, to review the downtown market study that has been done. At this time, I'd like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Lukey.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Milner. I'm going to turn this over to Bill Sanford in a minute to introduce the presentation. But first of all, I think it's great to see our downtown stakeholders here and some of our interested neighbors here, as well as Danielle and Sharon. This is a part of the planning process that council began several years ago, first looking at SOMO and the development opportunities there, and then the downtown. I think council remembers that in addition to this being an important part of the planning process, we understood from our consultants at Pogemeyer that having a downtown market strategy would be an important part of our ability to secure future grants for downtown. I think our initial target, which was the CBG grant program, was something that we were hoping to use this for initially. That grant program has been slowed a bit over in the current time period, but we feel that there are some other funding opportunities, and the return of the CBDG program, I always get that wrong, don't I, Danielle? That will be very important that we have a study like this on the shelf and ready to go. So I think from a development standpoint, but also from a city funding and economic standpoint, this is a very important component. So I will turn it over to Bill. He can set the stage a bit more and then introduce our presentation.
Thank you, Mark. Yes, and I want to bring up our guests to go over. As promised, when we had this approved to do the market study, Sharon Woods from Land Use USA said she would come back to go over the results of the study. And again, this is still in the draft form. It'll be finalized after tonight, and I think Sharon told me it's a couple weeks away that we'll have the final draft then, and using some of the input even that we hear tonight. And Danielle Steinhauser is also here from Pogemeyer Design, who's been working with us for over a year now on this plan, our downtown plan that Mark was alluding to. And without further ado, I'd like to turn it over to Sharon, and we'll hear from both of them, then open it up to questions from council, and then also from the general public. Sharon?
Thank you both. Good evening.
Good evening.
So what I'd like to do is maybe just talk for perhaps 10, 15 minutes about the recommendations that came out of the market strategy. And then in a little bit, I'd also like to have Danielle with Pogemeyer Design Group come up and also talk a little bit more about how this fits into the plan. And so I just kind of want to have a, you know, informal, direct, you know, just kind of discussion about what the outcomes were of the study and the strategy. I didn't really plan a PowerPoint presentation. Instead, what we had done is we brought along the two-page executive summary, which is a pretty easy read, I think. But even that, I think it really helps to just, you know, kind of talk about what does all of that really mean, and to have an opportunity to maybe answer some of your questions that may not be immediately apparent in the executive summary. So to start, I really want to go back to the first time that I visited Sylvania. And I felt very optimistic from day one. And I still feel as optimistic, if not more, about what the opportunities are for the downtown and for your community. And some of the things that I saw then and I still see today, and seeing when I did the geographic analysis of Sylvania, is that, first of all, it's your proximity to the Toledo metropolitan area. So you really are, in many ways, an extension of that MSA. So the 600,000 plus residents within that greater geography all represent potential visitors into your downtown, as well as the 20,000 residents who you might consider to be local shoppers and local residents. So there are many downtowns throughout the United States that really are really relatively isolated, surrounded by agricultural land or perhaps disjointed, not having that best access to highways and linkages and access to all of that population. But even though we have a lot of competition here, you have so many people, about 600,000 people really can contribute to your retail and expenditure potential. So not all of that is necessarily going to be captured by you, because some of them are going to be lower income. Some of them may be, it may be difficult for some of those populations to get to Sylvania if they have to cross over a river and take several different highways and exits in order to get here. But still, I would say even half of them are still candidates for your potential retailers to target. Also, they're not going to come every week, much less every day. They're not going to come every month, perhaps even. But some of them will come once a year or twice a year. And that all boosts, that all bolsters the expenditure potential and the retail potential for your downtown. So that's a huge asset that I really want to encourage that you think about your community as being an extension of that greater Toledo area. If you're not already doing so, it's often really easy to just think about our municipal jurisdictional boundaries. But think about that whole market. If you're advertising and thinking about which zip codes do I want to advertise to, or which newspapers go into the entire Toledo area and try to advertise regionally as opposed to locally. The other thing is that I see very favorable income profiles, high educational attainment, and low housing vacancies, high home ownership, high educational attainment. All of these are positive demographic indicators of your resident capacity, the capacity of your local residents to actually shop for discretionary goods. So every household needs basics like, you know, groceries, pharmacies, basic clothing, basic resources to maintain a home and have a safe home for their family. But then there's also this upper crust that has more discretionary income than average to spend on boutique stores, arts, entertainment, venues that that really add to quality of life and really make Sylvania a place that they really want to live, raise a family, and even enjoy their retirement years. So demographically, you're strong. Locationally, you're strong. Also, in terms of highway linkages, I looked closely at that as well. And I really believe that what you're doing along Monroe is as important as what you're doing along Main Street, because Monroe is your connector from the highway into the downtown. Right now, I think we're losing maybe half of our traffic counts are turning and going toward the hospital or going into Kroger, and they're not making it into the downtown. I see that traffic as, again, an opportunity to just intercept more of that and pull it that extra two or three short blocks to get them into the downtown. And I think we can do that with the right mix of venues and the right entertainment resources. So one of the biggest challenges is the small size of the downtown. The fact that we have one block that's what I would call the downtown core. That's what I call the core. It's just from Monroe to Maplewood. That short block is the traditional shop retail environment that's a downtown core. And we can arguably extend it at least another block to go up to the Haymarket Square and to go up to the what we call the historical village. And there's certainly more retail space in there, but there is some disconnect in terms of parking spaces and not quite traditional types of uses, apartment buildings, that sort of thing. But what I would love to see, ideally, in the best of all worlds, if we could redraw the canvas, you would have at least two blocks of a historic downtown. And I think that the market, I know that this market, with everything that I just said before, has the market support to support, you know, there's enough support to justify a contiguous two-block-long historic downtown. But we don't have, that's not the current infrastructure. That's not how the facilities are currently built. We've got apartments again, we have setbacks, we have a unique, you know, wonderful historic village. But if we had more retail space, you would have more, not quite critical mass, but you'd have, you would be able to double your draw if you could just double the amount of retail space that you have. It's hard to see that today when you have high vacancies. But it's almost a self-perpetuating problem, where if you are small, you function small. And if you're functioning small, it's really tough to fill space and have a larger trade area. If you're this small, getting that trade area to be big is really tough, and it's going to be hard for your retailers to thrive. So one of my recommendations is long-term, and as a long-term goal, I would like you to have a vision for finding ways to add retail space into your downtown environment. And there are different ways we can talk about how to do that, and that is really where Hobemeyer and the planning team come in, as well as how creative can we get in terms of adding retail space. And we can talk about mixed use as well, office, above street front retail, we can talk about parking. There are a lot of interrelated issues that come up. How do you find the land? How do you find the room to do that and still address parking? And but I can say from a market demand and market potential aspect, there is room to support a much larger downtown. And by much, I mean that you could double the amount of retail space that you have. So in the executive summary, I do lay out on the very first page some of the planning items that we are also recommending. One of the things I want to talk about is the importance of prioritizing and sequencing certain things, that certain strategy items. So we may, for example, have recommendations in here that would enhance the downtown or add, you know, amenities for quality of life, but they may not necessarily be the economic catalyst. They would be things that would come in maybe at stage three that would really strengthen the downtown. Really, the first priority is to try to fill vacant space, some of the vacancies that you currently have. But let me go through these planning items. And first of all, this is the first item, which is convey a downtown core and historical village as one district. This is a conceptual recommendation. We've heard the recommendation that you take the historical village and create a cultural and arts district out of that area. My recommendation is that because you're small, and because the historical downtown is only one block, you already have, that also is a historical district. It's in many ways a real estate challenge that if you have a business come to Sylvania and say, I want to open a business in downtown Sylvania. If it's an arts and cultural type of venue, I don't necessarily want to steer them towards one block versus another. I think that your chances of filling vacancies are much better, could even double, if you open up the entire world of real estate choices to any business, regardless of whether it's retail or whether it's cultural and arts related. So for example, you could have a studio, an art studio, or an art gallery open in the historic in the downtown core, and you could have an infant boutique store open in the historical village. And not necessarily say this block has to be retail and that block has to be arts and culture. I hope that makes sense. So kind of thinking about that when you brand and when you conceptualize your environment, think about that entire two-block area as your historic cultural district and not just the village that you have today. It's a marketing concept. And it's also opening up the choices of real estate to potential businesses. If I'm a new business, If you give me three options in the historic village and say you can be here, A, B, or C, and that's one option. Or if you give me six choices that include also the downtown core, I've now got six choices, six places to choose from, and my inclination is far higher that I'm going to actually sign a lease somewhere. Yes.
Do you envision SoMo as being a part of this extension?
You know, I did not. It depends on implementation on SoMo. When I read the strategy for that project, it read to me that there were recommendations for restaurants, but not necessarily other types of retail. My strategy recommendations tend to be retail specific first. So my recommendation is that you do load retail into the downtown core and the historic village, and that you let those restaurants go to SoMo. What else happens at SoMo, I do think it's very important to tie SoMo in a pedestrian-friendly way into the main street, but I would rather see more retail added as an extension along Main Street than say that retail space along Monroe is a proxy for that. I really think that it ought to go north as opposed to east-west, if possible. So I would rather explore options for adding retail space along Main Street, or along, is it Summit that runs? Or along Summit, even options there in terms of utilizing parking spaces, parking lots that you have. And we can come back and talk about that more too if you like. I know that the Downtown Association is already working on creating a website, so that work is underway for that. I just want to emphasize how critical and important that is. In today's current market, I recommend even that every single business that's a retailer in a downtown environment have a website. You know, it's just for a clothing store, or a boutique, or an art gallery to not have a website in today's market is really a miss. Many downtowns are thriving, that are really doing well, they're filled with businesses that are sustaining not just on pedestrian traffic, but also through internet sales, and being able to supplement that internet business. It's like we really have to find a way to live with the internet and perhaps benefit from it rather than fighting it. Let's see. Also, there are other recommendations here. Item 4 really ties back in with item 1. It's really about allowing artisans and cultural art venues to organically mix with the retail, to just kind of let this be something that organically evolves rather than trying to shoehorn, arts into one area and retail into another. Item 6 is a little bit about just making sure that we're using volunteer resources as wisely as possible. And it, for many communities, it depends on their success level of being able to recruit volunteers. I think that you're perhaps doing better, if not far better, than many other communities in having volunteers step forward and use their time. And Danielle, in a little bit too, will talk about the four-point approach from the National Main Street Center's four-point approach and how you organize four different committees, with one committee perhaps focused on events, another committee focused on business recruitment. And if you have only one committee and all of your volunteers are channeling all their energy into events, business recruitment can't happen. I mean, it's just that, there's only so much energy and time that they can do. So making sure that there's a dedicated task force and their primary goal is business recruitment, I think is really important. Yes.
Now, does that speak to your recommendation here, the very last thing here that says simplify downtown events? Could you describe what you mean by that a little bit more?
Yeah, my sense, and this is a little bit of perception, but my concern is making sure, again, that downtown events are not creating a diversion to the point where business recruitment isn't happening. Because downtown events feel immediate, so you can say, well, we've got an event coming up in a month, and then events, all of your resources, your volunteer resources are channeled towards making that event happen. And those events, I mean, as you know, they take a huge investment. They take a lot of time and energy and resources. So if that's happening and you don't also have a dedicated task force on business recruitment, then that's the thing that tends to slide and tends to not happen. And with, you know, no matter how many events you have, you can add more and add more and add more events. If you don't have a viable downtown with low vacancy, it's not doing that much for you in terms of increasing your actual sales transactions at stores. The priority really is let's fill these vacancies and then let's try to bolster the retail sales at the businesses in general. And maybe we can get sales up by 10 or 15 or even 20% for various businesses. But the first objective is to fill those vacancies. And I really believe that that's a priority. So events come in to supplement sales. But if you have high vacancy, then that's really your first concern. I hope that helps. Mm-hmm.
So fewer and less complicated events, is that kind of point?
I would say two or three really good events throughout the year. Probably two in the summer and maybe one in the winter, like a Christmas event and then two in the summer that are really impactful. And if that means freeing volunteer resources to dedicate other volunteers to business recruitment, then you're going to win. That's going to be a better winning solution than having all of your, again, part of it is volunteers. If you have enough volunteers to do all of those events and you also have enough volunteers to do business recruitment, then you're way ahead of the bar. But there are a few communities that I've found that are able to sustain that. Volunteers do get worn out is one challenge as well, is you have to anticipate that you will have volunteer turnover. It's just natural, as with anything. And so you don't want to burn your volunteers out.
Any comments?
Yes.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
I wasn't sure. So you're saying you have two or three really good events, and that from the downtown association, or is that from the chamber?
Yeah, can you please, we need to have you come forward for the record and state your name. State your name and address, please.
Hi, Jen Linehan from Beautiful Blooms. I am the Downtown Savannah Association Vice President. I was just wondering, do you mean two or three events for our association, or you mean with the chamber, with the city, with the historical village, we should only have three events? Because we're trying to get together a couple events, but the chamber has one almost every single month, the historical village has them almost, you know, every couple months. So then there's all of these events, and then it looks like we're doing all these things when we're really only doing a couple.
Right, okay. I would, yeah. My recommendation is that your volunteers focus on two or three a year.
And if you have those.
Yes, your organization would focus on two or three a year. Yep. And let's see, I just want to move into some of the other action items. So in terms of sequencing, again, I really think that the first priority, before we even talk about how to add more physical retail space to the downtown, that we really need to find a way to fill the existing vacancies that we have. And I counted about 14 when I was here, and I estimate that's about 20%, which to me is high. I would like to get that down to closer to 10%. So I'd like to fill, you know, six or seven of these vacancies before we really start being aggressive about planning to add more retail space. And I'm going to get to another piece of my discussion will be what sorts of businesses that should be. And then also allowing upper level space above the retail to be flex space. And this can be a zoning issue, a planning issue, it really ties more into planning, I guess, and zoning than that's often where the issue lies, is making sure that if you have upper level space on top of retail, that you're not necessarily saying this has to be residential, or that has to be office, or this has to be studio space. Allow the property owner to decide how, and to respond to the market, because it will change over time. you may decide, you may agree that today there's a big market for apartments or lofts or flats above retail. But 10 years from now, that could completely shift. It could be a demand for office. You may have a demand from, you know, real estate agents and attorneys and other professionals or artists looking for live-work units where they could have, you know, their residential quarters behind a studio. But let the individual property owner decide how to customize that space to accommodate various needs that change over time. So that flexible zoning, I think, is important. One of the key recommendations that I know will come up again probably in some of the questions is having a significant entertainment venue that creates, that adds to the destination. And when we ran the gap analysis, looked at supply and demand in the marketplace, one of the things I looked at closely was community theaters, playhouses, cinemas, big theaters of various sizes, and taking into account the Franciscan Theater, the high school, you know, amenities that are in downtown Toledo. And, you know, again, I can elaborate on this more, but this is a key recommendation that this would be a great way. This is your economic catalyst. If you think about catalysts, you need something that's impactful, that's significant, and that increases your trade area draw, that increases how far people are willing to drive to come to visit your community. There are a lot of other things like streetscaping, wayfinding, you know, other types of amenities that add amenities, I mean, that add to the quality of life and the environment, but they're not necessarily economic catalysts. They're nice to have. They certainly add to the environment. They create a more enjoyable shopping environment, but they're not the driver. They're not going to fix the problem. So fixing the problem is a real estate issue and an issue with filling vacancies. And we're filling vacancies with the right types of businesses and to allocating volunteer time toward business recruitment. That is how you fix the problem. And things like wayfinding and streetscaping and even addressing parking, walkable amenities, those are all, we need those two to compete and to add to the environment, but they're not going to be the economic catalyst that's going to fix the problem. Stonewall is a really great economic catalyst. I think that's, I mean, so you obviously have experience, you know what I'm talking about. The Stonewall project is a great example of how you create an economic catalyst and you do something that's meaningful. So I think that's a, you have a great track record already here for yourselves. So I think what I'd like to do is, if you like, you can talk a little bit about what the retail mix would be, or I can move forward and pass it over again.
Could you go back and, you might have said this and I might have missed it, but under your planning items, number five, ensure that non-retail services cannot occupy street level space. Talk a little bit more about that.
Sure, this is a challenge that many communities are faced with. Is if you have high vacancy, it's really tempting to allow non-retail services to come in and occupy that vacant space.
So that would be like a law firm or an insurance office or something?
Yes, it could be insurance, it could be law, it could even, it could be medical. I'm sorry, I thought I heard my name. It could be...
So you're passing it out to the group.
That's okay, yeah. It's anything that is not a discovery type of true traditional retailer. So by retail, I would say it would be... selling true merchandise. And there are some categories that are kind of bridge, like there are, if you think about medical supply businesses, for example, some downtowns have found themselves having to allow medical supply stores to come in and occupy space because they're selling merchandise. But there are a lot of those types of businesses that tend to actually downgrade your community. So I really think my understanding is that you've already made some progress in terms of controlling, not letting too many services come and fill retail space. But I just really had to work this in and emphasize how important this is. Even though your building owners and property owners might challenge you on it because it makes it harder for them to fill vacant space, it's still for your downtown's health, you know, downtown overall, it's the healthiest choice and it's the best long-term choice.
So following up though on that, what about the second stories of buildings? Is that appropriate for this kind of business that you're talking about?
The yes,
insurance
it is.
Offices and the law firms and so on?
Yes, and I'm very specific here in my wording that I say street level.
Okay.
That is, I'm being very specific in using that word. So if you have an attorney or a doctor's office or a dentist's office or a financial advisor, tax accountant, any of those types of businesses, if they wanted to come and fill upper level space, I would welcome them. I just would not want them to fill street level space.
Okay. And going back to your earlier point, that would have a higher value than residential, in your opinion?
In terms of
office. Second story.
Yes, I think so, because it tends to be more revenue generating. You can still generate revenue from perhaps... and it's more likely that you're, as a municipality and as a city, you're more likely to feel the benefit.
To putting it plainly, five people working in an accounting office on the second floor generates more tax revenue
yes.
than three people living in an apartment.
In general.
Yeah.
In general.
Okay.
Yes. And I, you can also argue, though, that having the lights on in the evening when you have residents who are living in those lofts or apartments or flats is also a good thing. Mm-hmm. And that residents living there in the evening that might be working elsewhere during the day can also share parking. So there are a lot of arguments that go both ways. I really think that upper level space, again, let the building owner decide and adapt that space to the market as they choose. There may be one building owner that says, you know what, my space is perfect for flats or lofts or condos. And right next door, you might have another owner that says, my space is best for professionals, for medical, for doctors, attorneys, lawyers, whatever. And to allow that variety, I think, is healthier than saying it all has to be one or the other, because then you're limiting your market. And part of the challenge, again, is that you're physically small. If you were much larger, I might be able to say, okay, designate that district as this and that district as that. But I don't think you're large enough to have that liberty. Yes.
Just to follow up on Mr. Lukey's question, I had circled number five as well,
yeah.
especially the word insure. Insure means some, how would you go about ensuring that first floor are retail only? Is this zoning? Is it?
Yes.
Are there examples around where you can do that?
Yes, you can actually work it right in literally with your wording. You can actually prepare a list that says these types of businesses are allowed in our downtown in this district. These types of businesses, 10, are allowed, and these types of businesses are not allowed. And there are communities that actually will say medical supply stores, thrift, rummage, antiques even, some of them will actually say hydroponics are explicitly not allowed.
And landowners, property owners, have they ever challenged those types of issues? Because what you're basically taking away their ability to fill it with certain types of uses.
They complain and scream. But I'm saying that you have to do it. Some, they don't necessarily scream, all of them, but you will get somebody who objects.
I thought so. Okay, thank you.
Sounds
absolutely.
Like
it won't go without objection.
Sounds like an interesting intellectual exercise for Mr. Hainem.
A lot of interesting property rights.
Yeah.
See, the nice thing here is I can stand up here and give you my recommendations and tell you this is what you really need to do, but I get to leave and you can't, hopefully you won't stone me before I've gotten to my car. Yes.
I have a question. You mentioned using volunteer hours for business recruitment. Do you have a suggested strategy using volunteers for business recruitment?
Yeah, and can we come back maybe and talk about that a little bit more, because Danielle is going to talk about the Main Street four-point approach to organizing committees a little bit. And that segues right into that discussion.
Okay.
Is that okay? Yep. Do you want to?
Sure.
I don't know if it's appropriate now or later, and you'll tell us, right?
Sure.
And that is this. It sounds, you know, from a real estate standpoint, we're talking in large part about smaller, locally owned kinds of businesses, right? I mean, that's what we have in our downtown. I think that's what makes downtown great.
Yes.
These are people who don't have the resources to be... are these people the kind of businesses that have the ability to be effective in the real estate market? How do you structure an outreach to these folks, and how do they structure a response back to make sure that we don't miss the kinds of merchants that we want to have, right?
Yes, and that segues into the recommendations on what types of businesses, and I was actually quite specific. As you get into the report a little bit more, you may not have this in front of you, but we get quite specific in terms of how you sequence what types of retailers you go after. Because there are some opportunities that are stronger after you bring a collective group of businesses together. So the first priority is really on boutique types of apparel stores. And I know that we've heard from the stakeholders and from the stakeholders that, you know, we've already got several clothing and apparel stores here. But that's part of what helps bolster and support that opportunity. And I'm a retailer by trade, I'm always thinking about clustering. I'm thinking about critical mass. I'm thinking about what are my adjacencies. So for me, a single clothing store is gonna struggle more than having three clothing stores, or having a bridal shop, an infant boutique, a shoe store, a haberdashery, some of the other things that a bridal shop, but even having a store that has, you know, modern trends for the younger population. Having a cluster like that creates a destination, whereas one clothing store by itself is going to limp along. And the same thing applies to furniture, applies to artisans and studios. It's really, you know, identifying what is most likely to come first, even though you already have high vacancies. I would really struggle to argue that you could bring a real specialty type store that might have to be here and just kind of pedal by itself. It's just really, it makes it tough. So some of the other categories we have, like a scrapbook supply store. I know that you had one and that it closed. I think that a business like that can really do best if we also have other types of hobby, craft, and studio artisan type shops. But I think to get there, it's far more likely to be able to attract more apparel stores that enhance what you already have. So a lot of this is I see this sequence. I have to do this in order to create the market for that. And that builds a synergy to support that. But, you know, having a shop that sells caramel corn is going to struggle, because that's not first in the sequence. It's actually number four in the sequence. I hope that.
No, well, that reinforces what I hear from the shoppers in my family. You know, they love going to Lady C, but they say, I wish I could go someplace and look at shoes.
Right.
So that seems to be consistent with what I hear around the family table.
Mm-hmm. If they're women, they're right.
That's certainly not me.
Any other questions for me before I pass it to you, Danielle?
One quick question about this theater thing. Mm-hmm. I'm having trouble figuring out where we're going to put that. Is that something that you could see? You talked about restaurants and SOMO. Could the theater be not downtown, but someplace like SOMO that's kind of off our present beaten path?
I think so, but I would... The biggest thing is that, I mean, my primary care is your downtown merchants. They're the ones that I'm really trying to help, because if they do well, you do well. So the challenge becomes a planning and physical connectivity issue, is connecting the SOMO project in a pedestrian-friendly way with Main Street. And if you can find a way to do that, I think it, you know, we have to find a way to bridge that gap. So my inclination is to explore other options that are right in the heart of the downtown first, and see if we can possibly, you know, just find a way to be creative and maybe get it where it's even, you know, even along Summit, even near Rite Aid or something where it has visibility from and, you know, there, a lot of that is it's a planning challenge. So I'm going to, with that, I think it's a good place to segue to Danielle and let her talk about how this fits in with planning and talk about the organizing volunteers as well. Thank you. To address your question about volunteers, you're very quickly understanding why I like to work with Sharon so much. She gets the 4 points. All of her recommendations that talked about planning things, volunteer things, the promotions calendar, she understands the inner workings of those 4 points. Just to remind you really quickly, they're organization, design, economic restructuring, and promotions. Organization is the volunteer piece. None of those 4 points are islands, okay? We talked about it a little bit with the steering committee. We've written a chapter on that. The design piece, which we talked about here in council about a month ago, got all excited about that. But as Sharon so eloquently reminds us, you know, it's not just how it looks, it's also how it economically functions. Randy and I knew a long time ago that, and as did you, that the, what I'll call the top half of your downtown from Maplewood to Erie didn't feel the same as the bottom half. But, you know, I always kind of thought, you know, hey, this can economically function the same way. And one of the first things that I got from Sharon's report was, yes, we're right on target. It can economically function. And now we just have to make the physical environment hook together a little bit better, which we can do. And then that promotions piece, it also has to be programmed well. And that'll be the next chapter. We're very quickly coming to a close on this. You remember we got a small extension. We're very quickly coming to a close of that extension, so you'll be seeing a draft plan very, very soon. We will get a lot of the language from Sharon. She's going to put together a final report for you. The market study is a separate contract, is it a separate product? But what Randy and I want to do is then actually integrate that into your plan so that, you know, the recommendations that she makes about the design piece and the promotions piece, those have ties narratively and also in the implementation chapter. So we will tie it all together. It'll all be there. The volunteer recruitment piece. You guys have a lot of tools in the toolbox. Many communities that I work with aren't blessed. First you have Bill, you have a city staff person that's tasked with that. You have a very active and very talented chamber. And you have a growing and emerging downtown organization. So you kind of are, you know, it's triple threat. So, you know, however you guys want to work together to do that, I don't know that the plan will necessarily tell you do this, this, and this, but certainly, you know, it'll say, you know, put together a business recruitment team, and these are kind of the elements that you should address in it, and how you want to work that out, what's on the public side, what's on the private side. It's great that you have a partnership to work with there. A lot of communities, they have one or the other, but not a lot of them have both. So, you know, as much as we can moving forward, we'll certainly be on staff to try to help brainstorm some of those ideas and help them put them together. Love to do that. That's the fun part. That's when you get into how do you give this thing legs. Mr. Luke, you had mentioned the Tier 2 program. Just to give you a very brief update on that, for fiscal year 12, which will be starting July 1, they have, they being the state, has allocated $0 into the Tier 2 program. Now, we can't control that, but what they did do was they allocated $1.5 million into the Tier 3 program, which is the discretionary program. Those guidelines, the last we heard, those guidelines were going to be made available June 1. So until they tell us what kinds of things they're looking for, we can't really effectively put together any kind of a proposal. We can start, you know, ideas hopping in different people's minds, and, you know, we can talk about the possibilities, but
it's kind of uncomfortable. Now, having said that, Tier 2 program was a big tool in the toolbox, but we've long known, it, you know, you can't have only a hammer in the toolbox, otherwise everything starts to look like a nail. So we are trying to put together other financing options, and I've been spending a lot of time on the phone talking with different people, trying to look at other scenarios that can help your downtown. I don't think in any way this was a waste of time. I think that, I mean, you even alluded to it in your opening comments, you have to have this kind of data for the city, for Bill to do his job, for the chamber to effectively recruit people, and also for the emerging downtown organization. You have to have that playbook for them to be successful. And I'm so, it gives me a lot of energy. I know I don't look like I need it, but it gives me a lot of energy to come here and to see what kind of volunteer commitment there really is. That doesn't happen every place I go. I was actually on an interview recently where one of the people on the panel said, have you ever been in a place that you wrote a plan for that nothing ever happened? And I said, sadly, yes. Yes, I have. And that happens when the private sector doesn't show up. You can't leave it all to the city. It can't be your job. It can't be all Bill's job. It can't be the mayor's job. You know, it has to have that private sector partner, and it's enormously satisfying to know that you guys have that here. So I see good things now that you have a roadmap to work from. So not to go on and on too much. Does that answer kind of? I know I can't answer it directly because I can't get into your city workings and say, do this, this, and this. That really is a home rule kind of thing. But I can certainly work with Sharon, and we can say business recruitment team should be armed with this, this, and this, and these are the kind, I mean, she's already said, these are the kinds of businesses you're going to go after. And, you know, from that, you know how to approach them and what to say and what to leave behind and those kinds of things. I know I can't answer it fully, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'd love to. I'd love to be around long enough to be able to, but... is there any other questions for me? My piece here, this is Sharon's show tonight. My piece here is merely contextual. Can I come back up and answer some more questions?
I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Sure.
Shoot.
We want to make sure we get questions from the public as well. So, you know, at some point, Ty, we should open it up to them.
Yeah, I would say it's about 11 till maybe 5 more minutes with council members. Then we want to hear from the folks that are here. So.
I have a question. In looking at the executive summary, you know, one of the things you point to are the number of vacancies that we have in our downtown. And as we want to try to expand the retail or expand the usage of our downtown, is there anything in your report that addresses how that would correlate to the present parking situations that we have, or what our needs for parking, and any suggestions as to how we might want to address it?
Yeah, absolutely. I did not actually address parking specifically in the report, but the question has come up before, and we've had discussions with Pogemeyer and Design Group in particular, and also with Bill, in terms of, you know, how do we collectively as a team, what is our, you know, professional opinion anyhow about parking? And I will say my biggest concern for you with parking right now is that it is confusing. My sense is that you have enough parking for your existing businesses and probably even for your existing retail space. But the fact that it's confusing, it makes it, you know, kind of presents this perception anyhow to a visitor that parking isn't adequate. So, you know, we have two sides of Main Street. If we're on the west side, to me it's confusing to understand where the municipal parking. And what I mean is where your police officers are parking and where your municipal vehicles are parking and where visitor parking is available. So right away, I mean, even the flow and the position of where that parking is
I think maybe, to me, it wasn't clearly delineated that I was okay to park in a certain area. You're comfortable with it because you've lived here, you know that you're okay to park there, but if you're a visitor, I didn't have high confidence in knowing that I was okay parking where I was. The east side of the street, the east side of Main Street, between where you access parking off of Summit, you come off of Monroe, you turn right on Summit, and the parking's on your left. You have the bank parking first, and then you have two other segments of parking, and then there's a house, and then there's another little field of parking. That is so not connected, and so the parking is honestly unfriendly, particularly to a visitor, again. There are surface problems, traffic flow problems, egress access problems. To me, the first time I pulled in there to park, I felt like I was jammed already, just trying to maneuver between the spaces, the tight corridors and vehicles that were coming and going. So I think that you can address perceptions of inadequate parking by how you configure the space that you have. Now, if we add a significant entertainment venue, like a theater, playhouse, combination of the two, even a theater that might also be an entertainment venue for a dining or a drinking establishment even, I think then, and if you're also adding retail space with infill and perhaps even adding new structures in your downtown that add retail space, now I think we need to come back and really seriously think about and look at the ratios of parking to space. So there are guidelines in the books, in many books. Big box retailers, Walmart Supercenter, if they can get away with 6 or 7 spaces for every 1,000 square feet, they will try. The convention for most regional shopping centers is maybe 5 to 6 spaces per 1,000 square feet. That's how we end up with these big parking fields. And a lot of it is seasonal. These big box retailers want that parking because there's 1 week out of the year, the week before Christmas, where they need it. And it's really just a runoff, rainwater runoff vehicle. We've found that in downtown districts, we can get the ratios down as low as 3.5 per 1,000 square feet, particularly if you have mixed use. A lot of communities still have it in the books that you have to have 4 or 5 spaces for every 1,000. To me, if you can have a mixed-use environment, I think there's room to get that down. But again, if you're adding a significant venue, we do need to think about how we address parking and what is your palette and what is your policy is it something that you could, that your community could be comfortable with the idea of even having deck parking? Is something that I really think you may have to think outside of the box on that. Danielle, do you want to contribute?
Just to add, while that may not all show up in Sharon's report, it is reflected in your downtown plan. That's more of a design issue. And Randy did cover parking. You haven't seen the draft chapter yet, even though you've seen the presentation. It is covered in there. So, and that's why, again, I love working with Sharon, because she gets that interconnectedness.
Quick question. How many seats are in a significant theater, cinema, entertainment venue? What size is significant?
How many what states?
When you're saying theater, cinema, how many people is a significant venue? Is it 100 or 500?
Yeah, if you haven't been to the Franciscan Theater, that is 850 seats crammed into that Franciscan theater. They are fixed seats and a fixed stage. That is the challenge that they have there is that is pretty large. And I'm actually recommending that you have something that's far more intimate, that is closer to 250 to maybe 300 seats. I also recommend that those seats be movable and that the stage be movable, and that you actually have flex space I actually went into the Franciscan Center before this meeting, this evening, and before I met with Bill Sanford, and we sat down and talked. But I was able to go into the Franciscan Center, and I actually interviewed, well, she was the assistant to the assistant director. Her name is Mickey. I don't know if you know her. But I actually talked with her and gave her my card, explained what we were doing, and I kind of did an impromptu interview. And she shared a lot of information with me. She said that actually the Franciscan Center, that commons, the big commons area where they hold events, is only open to the public during off student months, which means literally, I mean, it's August through April. You cannot rent space. So it's so tough that if you want to have a wedding reception at the commons, you have to book it out to past 2014. I mean, they're booked. So, yeah. So it's really, it is also, and I know I'm kind of taking a tangent off of the seat issue, but I do want to just kind of emphasize that the community theater and playhouse concept comes with the importance of having a brand that is the City of Sylvania's Playhouse. It's non-denominational. And it's not affiliated with a college. And I think that, and it's also more intimate space, it's smaller, and it's flexible. And it's in your downtown. So all of those things make you unique, and it would make the project unique. So we're not recommending something that's just redundant to the Franciscan Center. It really, it truly unique.
Sharon, Danielle, I'd like to open up to questions.
One quick question, just on the parking piece.
Mm-hmm.
I get what you were saying about parking south of Maplewood, okay, mm-hmm. but unfriendly and confusing.
Yes.
Talk about parking, though, north of Maplewood. It strikes me that that's really problematic, right? Because if you're talking about retail in that block, I'm needing to have you help me understand how we do that with parking.
It's going to take some major redesign. There's no way around it. The way it is right now, we do have to, in some ways, look beyond what it is and look to what it can be. I am not a big advocate for changing the feel of that necessarily, making it more dense. Sure, I get that, but dense in terms of usage, not dense in terms of physically. That was one of the first things that Sharon and I talked about when we reviewed early drafts. I said, what do you mean making it bigger? Well, what's this? And she's like, oh no, economically making it more dense, not necessarily physically making it more dense.
Okay, so as a practical matter though, would a retail consumer walk from a parking structure south of Maplewood, that block up to Erie Street, you know, I mean, or do they need to be, have to be more convenient than that?
If the economics are right and the programming is right, yeah, go walk.
So if there's like a really killer shoe store at the end of the block, go walk.
I think the block and a half is the limit of the tolerance, truly. I mean,
a
block and a half is the limit. So you might be, you know, a short block over and a block off, but you are correct in saying that's really where the limit is. It kind of drops off there. Shoppers are lazy and they're thinking about hauling those shoes back to their car. So it is definitely it's a valid. It's a valid concern that you have. So
like 60 feet, but they won't walk beyond 60 feet of blank space. So when you talk about missing teeth in your district, you want things to be physically more dense. It's either 60 or 75 feet that they'll think, no, and go the other way.
As a retailer, I think about downtowns, and I always go back to the fundamentals of how a downtown can compete with big box. So big boxes have fields of parking, and parking's not an issue. Downtowns differentiate themselves by being a unique environment, by offering unique products and higher service levels, not necessarily lower price. You're not trying to be low price. You're not trying to beat Walmart on its low price strategy. You're not going to be able to. Your merchants have to buy in smaller quantities, and because they're buying in smaller quantities, they just cannot they cannot do what Walmart is doing, which is buying in bulk and then selling, you know, high volumes of goods and pushing it out the door at a low price. Your merchants are selling uniqueness, enjoyable shopping environment, high service, and convenience. And convenience segues right into parking. Convenience means being able to pull your car right up to the front of that shoe store, get out of your car, and walk in. So one of the key strategies I always tell every community, begging your merchants not to take parking spaces in front of their own business. Use at begging them to walk the block to their car, even in the winter, so that those spaces are open for shoppers. And absolutely, your questions about parking are right on and valid. Squeeze in every parking spot that you can as creatively as you can, while still going back and addressing places that it's gotten confusing just over time. And through attrition, we've lost, you know, we've lost the ease of parking.
Yeah.
So it's an important issue and something that should be continued on.
I do have some ideas. I just, you know, I hesitate to discuss them in a public forum because I don't want them to be white and polar.
And I already feel bad about interrupting Todd, so why don't we, we should probably hear from
him. You know, I think we have had a parking study done.
We did.
Not too long ago that says that we have plenty of parking.
Yeah, Randy's got it, and it figured into him writing the design chapter that we have.
Okay.
But that was written before we have the market study, so now it's going to take a little fine-tuning.
But Doug, remember, it also said that it was unfriendly and confusing, right? And, you know, we sent Mr. Moan down that road, and I think he came back and said that was a very tough challenge to try to overcome, especially...
We addressed that somewhat with our wayfinding signs, right?
Yeah, we did, but, you know, the ideal... short-term solution was some sort of a remedy on the east side of Main Street, and I think we found that the property owners there were pushing back in some cases.
Doug, I think on that market study that we got, the parking, the comment had come back is that they felt that except for maybe an hour or two during the week, we had adequate parking or maybe some excess parking capabilities for the occupancy and the use that we presently have. If you want to increase the density or the usage, that's another story.
Yeah,
that's sort of a summary that I've got.
That's consistent with my recollection.
Yeah.
Jim, has anything changed in the dynamics on the east side of the street to help us remedy what Sharon appropriately identified as the fact that you've got not one big parking lot, but three or four separate parking lots with separate entrances?
I've not revisited it in the last year, personally. The same dynamics of owners is the same.
Mm-hmm.
One or two are resistant. The major problem at the Monroe Street component is the lease that the bank has for that parking lot and how it's laid out. And I think you have to start with the bank again, re-looking at how they want their space and what they're willing to accept, and then the other can flow. Mm-hmm. But it's the last several years, Fifth Third and most other banks really didn't have, that was not at the top of their priority list of things to do. So it's probably good to revisit it, but the people have not changed yet, to my knowledge.
Haven't become more civic-minded, huh?
I
it's important to have economic viable businesses. It's very
civic. Yeah, I don't want to interrupt your discussion, but I kind of have an analogy. It's like getting a young child to try to eat and enjoy an avocado.
Yeah.
And you have to introduce it to them. They've done studies on this. You have to introduce the avocado to them in small portions, bribe them with a quarter each time, take them to lunch for free, roll out the red carpet, and talk with them 8 times before they come back and say, you know, actually, I think I do like avocado. So it's you know, it may take going back every 3 months and saying, hey, remember I said the last time we had lunch that I wanted to follow up with you in 3 months? I'm following up with you. You talk with them again. You pull out the planning chapter. You review it with them. You look at the plan. What do you think? I still don't like it. You go back 3 months later, and it's a labor of love.
Our citizens have been very patient. Would anybody care to ask questions to our... two consultants that are here this evening? If so, please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Hi,
I think some of them might be co-conspirators in this.
Hi, Forrest Watkins, been a businessman in Spania for 46 years, for Richard Beckwith. Always talk about parking, Madeir. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I have older people. There's no place to park. I mean, absolutely none. And I don't know where we're going to find any more. The only thing I see is put the police cars over there and get 13 more spaces. They don't want to do that. If you talk about all these things from downtown Savannah, people don't come and there's no place to park. And, you know, they're not going to walk in that lot there. Not going to walk up there. So we are way crowded in this lot. Come around Thursday or Friday, no place to park. And it should be 2-hour parking instead of 3. Put some new signs up closer and have the police patrol it and pass out a few tickets. Because there's a lot of business people who park right up front.
We got to get this guy back to do a more in-depth deal. Quick question, though. You say you have some older customers. How?
Older customers,
yeah.
Like me.
Be careful about that. How would your customers feel about a two-tiered parking structure as opposed to surface parking?
Yeah, an elevator maybe, but no. These people are 75, 80, 85.
But would they be afraid of it per se? I mean, if we had an elevator, would they be afraid of going into a deck? Okay.
No, it's going to cost them a 2-star parking garage.
Well, I'm not asking. That's a different question, right? But I mean, we don't even want to have the conversation if you tell us that folks who are coming down to your shop wouldn't go into a parking structure, because some people won't, you know.
No, that's true. And of course, like they say, people want to walk in the front door. They don't want to walk, and they're not going to walk downtown business Savannah, park back on some street.
I get it.
Many things, and mm-hmm. The parking is, it's non-existent Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I have people come in and they go around and around and leave and come back. First, they got to park clean back at the railroad tracks.
Yep. Good point. Thank you.
You cannot have business without parking, and people don't want to walk.
So, but 2-hour parking and more aggressive enforcement?
I would say yes, that would help. And you could have the, you know, they could. Police could drive around like it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday and give some people some tickets. And, you know, there's people who, okay, one lady insurance business, she don't really care. She parks up front. Me, my people don't have a place to park. I'm out of business. So it makes a difference. So, I mean, you want to get all this downtown going. Well, we better get some parking going before you get the horse, before you get the cart.
Anybody else that... Bill, do you have enough?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I just want to thank both Sharon and Danielle for bringing this in. And again, we still need to wrap it up and to have a final document of this. I think it was a good discussion tonight and brought up some other topics. Do you have any other questions?
Well, you know, I do of the citizens. Is it fair to say that the fact that you didn't comment suggests that you generally support the recommendations that we're hearing tonight? I mean, I think we. I don't want to move ahead with a misunderstanding about what this says.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Carol?
Carol. Yeah, please come forward.
Well, I guess I'm a little confused because... I come to downtown Savannah quite often. I've never had a problem parking. Not for a festival or event or anything. I've just never had a problem. And I'm sorry, I don't know this gentleman. What is his business?
He's a barber shop. He's a barber.
Oh, okay. Probably
not. Not in the afternoon, and you will see. Not evening for events, but Sundays, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday during the day. Then you see we got parked.
Well, you know,
46 years, I know.
I don't know, but you know, I've never ever had a problem parking. And if you want to limit the parking time, I would only say that I think that you ought to consider that a part of the charm or attraction of coming to Savannah is to do what you want to do. And if you're worried about that you're going to get a ticket, I'm not sure that that's an enticement.
Carol, could you state your name and address for the record, please?
Carolyn Huber, 5300 Brandy Lane.
Thank you.
Jen Linehan. At the top, it talks about how we are trying to be get a unique shopping district that meets the needs of affluent residents and visitors. I can't afford anything in downtown Sylvania. 27 years old, I have my own business. There's nothing for me in my age. There's nothing that I can afford. It was my opinion that we need to get things to start getting the younger generation down here. And things that we're able to afford. And I know there's other people who aren't my age who still say there's nothing that they can afford, but there needs to be gifts that we can come down and get pick up a housewarming gift or a birthday gift for $25-$30. But we shouldn't be gearing towards, I know we've talked about children's shops, but not boutique. We need things that are affordable.
Yeah, you were involved with Bumble, yes?
Yes.
How did that fit that profile?
There wasn't anything in there I could afford.
Okay. Can we have
glasses for $60?
Can Sharon respond to that? Sharon, can you respond to what she's saying?
Yes.
Well, there's of course JoJo's, which is what I use the most.
What?
I eat pizza. And you can afford pizza in downtown. So
I know you can do that.
Do you really know how to show a girl the attack?
I do.
I appreciate your comment, and I will say many businesses do recognize that they need to be able to appeal to a broader demographic profile for their customers and shoppers. Most savvy, smart businesses will find a way to offer, you know, that product mix and that price point that bridges everywhere from, you know, the $10 item to the $30 item, and not just be nothing but high-end. The higher end products will expand your trade area geographically and enable you to pull shoppers from further away. And so from a retail strategy perspective, my objective, you know, from a fundamental analytic approach, my objective is to get businesses that can achieve the highest sales possible. So I would rather have a business that's doing $600,000 a year than have a business that's doing $300,000 a year. So I completely recognize and the concern that you still need to have some product and some merchandise that appeals to a diverse profile of your local residents. But, you know, it's on a merchant-by-merchant basis, I think a lot of it comes down to how various businesses are merchandising and making sure that we do have some variety. Again, right now, for me, in terms of preparing the strategy, I'm focusing on getting the largest trade area possible and getting the highest sales possible. And but I don't want to downplay the importance of making sure that the merchandise mix also is attainable for your local residents. And each individual merchant needs to have a strategy in place for addressing both. You can't just be all high-end. I, too, have to be able to go in and buy a purse without dropping $150. I want to be able to go in and find, you know, a rack where I can buy a purse for $25. So I do agree that that's important. I'm not going to downplay it.
I just want to make one observation here, I know this is this study prepared for us, for the city and for the council. But just looking at this, you know, there are limited things that we as the city can do. I mean, Jennifer, I think, you know, this market study is as valuable to you, and maybe more valuable to you and your organization and to the chamber than it is for us. I mean, this really helps put together a roadmap of how to enhance the economic viability of this downtown area. And we obviously have a role in that. As I look at this and I think about our zoning code, there are a couple things that jumped out at me here. Certainly, parking is an issue that is very much in our bailiwick, and we need to continue to work on this. But in terms of, and I know Bill is working on playing an active you know, the city playing a more active role in recruitment to our downtown area, particularly with SOMO and other opportunities. But a lot of this we can't do. We really need your help and participation and your feedback, and we will read the ultimate report, and I'm sure we will identify some specific hacks and some specific activities that the city can take. But my guess is by the time it's all over and done with, it's what our private sector partners do that will have a bigger impact on the success of this than what we end up doing. So, but we did prepare the report, because we're thinking about it and trying to provide some, you know, cogent thinking about how to make this happen. But we do need the help of our private enterprise neighbors to make this work.
Yeah, it's the P3, it's public-private partnership. And that is critical to any community these days.
And I think that you make a very valid point, Doug, because certainly I look forward to the final report, which won't be dramatically different than what we see here, but what are the next steps? I mean, and what kind of control do we really have over those next steps? I think that would be...
Two thoughts about that. To Mr. Sanford, I think that a critically important group of stakeholders that we don't see here tonight are our downtown property owners, the folks who, you know, you tell us, Sharon, are going to make rational decisions to get the right kind of businesses in here. I think it's very important so that they can help inform their rational decisions to hear what this report has to say. I mean, I'm a big believer in, if you don't know where you're going, you're going to end up someplace else, you know? And I think that it's important for these landlords to understand what kinds of businesses will provide the most viable rental opportunities for them. So somehow we need to do that. I guess I would also suggest, Mr. President, that we schedule an economic development subcommittee meeting and maybe have some follow-up and hear what might be the next steps for this plan. It's a great, I really do believe it's a very good piece of work. And we just need to keep, as Mary suggested, keep it moving. So we'll schedule that later tonight.
Are there other comments for our consultants to council? Mr. Sanford?
Kai, just to comment that I think it does make sense to, as Mark said, to follow up with the Downtown Association. I just wanted to make sure everyone knows that they're doing a great job, and they're really taking ownership of the downtown. And I want to thank Danielle, who's been coming to those meetings on a regular basis as she's been working on this plan. So we're not done yet. So this is a good a big step for us, and I think having this committee meeting would be the right next step, and then we can give a more thorough report after tonight.
Great. Thanks. Any other questions or comments? If not, this review of the downtown market studies and committee as a whole stands adjourned at 7:20 p.m. Thank you all very much for attending.